Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Something Rhymes with Purple. It's a podcast where my friend Susie Dent and I meet once a week and we talk about words and language, particularly the origin of words, where they come from. And the other day on one of our shows, it was the one about video games, we called it Pocket Monster, I challenged Susie to unearth the origin of the word digs, meaning places where you stay. Actors talk about their digs. Students talk about their digs. And, well, I didn't really know what the origin was, but I have a friend, a very distinguished actor called Peter Bowles. And he told me that he had come across, in the writings of James Boswell, the young Scottish writer and admirer of Dr. Johnson, who indeed made Dr. Johnson famous by writing about Dr. Johnson, pioneer lexicographer, he had come across a character called Diggins, who had a list of places where you could stay if you were an actor. It was known as Diggins's List. And he maintained that Diggs is because Diggins had a list of places where you would stay. Have you seen Diggins's List? Well, what do you think? What do you make of that, Susie? I asked you if you could inquire further. Have you inquired further? What do you think is the origin of Diggs?
I have, and I'm afraid to say that I haven't really budged from my etymological viewpoint, which is that it's short for diggings, which was an older word for the same idea. And actually, to be in digs usually was to live in a room with shared kind of facilities and, as you say, typically lodging for students, etc. But diggings goes back to the 16th century, often associated with Australia, because digger, as in hello digger, actually does come from the idea of the gold fields of Australia. But actually, early instances of diggings and later digs are all American. And it does seem to go back to the gold fields where the first prospectors would come to an unpopulated area, obviously, and they had to make shift as best they could, quickly build a shelter, often dig them into the ground, and eventually more accommodation was dug in together with, you know, taverns, etc., to cater for them. So all the evidence points away from a Mr. Diggins, not saying he didn't exist, but I suspect that one and one have been put together to make three in this instance. But I have to say, I do love Peter Bowles, as you will remember, because I tweeted this. I absolutely loved his story about, in your book of theatrical anecdotes, of his preparation, I think, with Albert Finney, the absolutely brilliant Albert Finney, for, it was Macbeth, wasn't it? How he would play Macbeth.
Yes.
Am I allowed to tell this story?
You can, of course. I've just found
this extract that I tweeted, and it's absolutely brilliant. So this is from Peter Bowles, going completely off topic. Confidence is almost 80% of what is needed for star quality. My teacher was Albert Finney. One night in our room, we were discussing what part we would most like to play. We both had the same ambition that when we left RADA and became professional actors, we would play Macbeth. Albert asked me how I would approach the part. I went on about Scottish history, the possibility of playing it with a Scottish accent, probably in a kilt, and of course I would really study all the great scholars, including Granville Barker. How would you approach it, Albert? I asked. I'd learn the fucking lines and walk on, said Albert. It's just so brilliant.
Brilliant.
That's why I love Peter Bowles. So honestly, anything he says usually goes. But in this case, not sure it's completely right.
Well, I will go around to his house because he lives near me in Barnes in southwest London. And I shall see if he can dig out his copy of James Boswell and see what actually was said. Because I think you may be right. This sounds like one of those stories that added to another story and made a, you know, well, as you say, one plus one makes three.
Yeah.
There was another word I discovered the origin of this week without your assistance.
Oh, yeah.
I've been away filming, and what I've been filming is a television series to be shown in the UK, where I and a friend of mine, another actress, the great Dame Sheila Hancock, go on canal journeys together. And we were on a canal, the Leeds to Liverpool canal this week, and we passed a statue of a navvy. And these canals were built by people known as navvies. And I knew the word navvy. I knew that it meant a labourer or somebody worked really hard, a navvy. I didn't know the origin. Do you? I mean,
no, instantly? That's really interesting. I'm not sure I do know exactly the history of it. Short for navigator?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That is completely correct. They were creating the navigation, the canals, which are known as navigations. So we were on a bit of, I think it was known as the Lee navigation, part of the Leeds to Liverpool Canal, and it was abbreviated to navvy. People who were navigators were known as navvies. They created the navigation. But it's interesting, over the years, it's become almost pejorative, as though you're a sort of they were, I think, rough, tough characters to build these things. But isn't it interesting? We take so many words for granted.
I know, I was thinking about that too. I was thinking of clippings this week because, you know, we kind of forget, and in fact, we might talk about this in this episode, we forget what van, for example, any van on the road, we forget what that's short for and what a history that word has had. I discovered this week that the word butch, used in many, many different ways, but with the sort of underpinned idea of masculinity, that's short for butcher's knife. Ooh. And actually a butcher's knife or a hunting knife was thought to be kind of, you know, tough and sturdy and quite masculine. I had no idea about
that. I had no idea. So if you've got a butch look, it's because butcher's knife, like hunter's knife, implies something virile, masculine, potent. Yeah. Well, while we were going along the canals, on the banks of the canal, we saw some interesting things. People on holiday, either in holiday homes, which I want to talk about, or in tents. Mm. And that made me think we talked about camping.
We did.
It's a good theme to talk about, particularly in this lockdown world, because I read somewhere that last year, with the lockdown here in the UK, one of our retailers who sells camping equipment, I think it was John Lewis, they saw their camping equipment sales increase by 58% compared with the year before. So, I mean, that's amazing.
It is. And a lot of people were actually making tents indoors, weren't they? They were putting them up indoors and having sort of little secret getaways with their kids. Or not secret, but just sort of...
That's rather fun, isn't it?
Yeah, just trying to...
Put the tent up at home. At least you won't get rained on. Tent sales went up 34%. Sales of fire pits tripled.
Yes, I bought my parents a fire pit.
Really? What's a fire pit?
Fire pit is just something that you can light outside because, let's face it, summer evenings in Britain aren't always the warmest, and you could just burn fuel in there and keep yourselves warm.
So this episode is Carry On Camping, which is the title of a very popular British movie of many years ago in the Carry On series, where the Carry On cast went out camping. Now, can we begin with the word camping? Is that a British word? Do they do camping all over the English-speaking world? What is the origin of camping?
Well, it's got a very... comes from a very illustrious family, I would say, camping, because it is linked to champions. It is linked to a university campus. It's linked to champignons, which are mushrooms in French, and it's linked to champagne, because it all goes back to Campus, which was an open field in Roman times. The Campus Martius, famously, where the Roman soldiers would practice and prepare for battle. So the idea of a kind of open space gave us the university campus. It gave us champignon, because champignon mushrooms grow in open spaces. It gave us champion because of those battle strategies and preparations that the Roman soldiers do. And it gave us champagne because, again, you know, champagne is a sort of large open area of French countryside. And the idea of a camp then, in the camping sense that we're talking about today, is that you are basically setting up a place to do whatever you want to do. So it goes from the idea of going to an open field, a level space, and setting up
whatever it is you want to set up there. Roman, the Latin that you mentioned right at the beginning, campus what?
Campus Martius, Martius.
As in Mars, the god of...
Exactly.
War and martial and everything to things that were military. So the Campus Martius is the origin of this. So that everything flows from that. But this is making me think when I next go camping, in my fire pit, I'm going to be cooking a mushroom omelette and washing it down with champagne. That would be appropriate, wouldn't it?
It'd be totally appropriate.
So, a variation of that is the word glamping.
Yeah.
Which is a...
Glamping is simply glamorous camping. So that's taking rugs, probably beds, duvets, you name it with you. How are you with camping? I don't know whether I see you as a camping type.
I'm not very good at camping. I've done it in my time. I like the idea of it. I'm amused by the idea of a tent and climbing inside it. But to be honest, I need softness underneath me. You know, you lie down on the ground and you find you're on a slight slope and the head is going down. Nah, it's not for me. And the guy ropes and putting it. Well, we're going to talk about why they're called guy ropes and why a tent's called a tent. Are you a camper? I mean, have you been camping?
Never have said that I was a camper because you know me, Jazz. I'm always cold. I'm very, very sensitive to cold, which is very annoying. So that's for me, is like my biggest dread is being cold and wet and not being able to do anything about it. But of course, you can take your hot water bottle. You can go and fill it from the communal area in your campsite. I actually went camping during lockdown when we were allowed to go camping, and it was brilliant. I really, really loved it, despite the fact that we were right on the edge of a main road. It wasn't so good, but it was fun.
It's the communal areas that get me down. When the children were small, we did do a few holidays that involved camping. We, the grown-ups, were in a caravan and the kids were under canvas. And the upside was that at the holiday camp, this was in France, there was a very nice restaurant. Well, it was, I call it a restaurant, it was more of a canteen, but the food was very good. The downside were the communal showers and the shared lavatories.
Yes, I know what you mean. Those are never pleasant.
They were the traditional. It was not that many years ago, but it was the traditional French style. Literally a hole in the ground and rather sinister sort of foot pads on which you were supposed to stand. No. Thank you very, very much.
I know what you mean. In those lieux d'aisance that you have on the French motorway, and then you go and find a hole. Yeah.
So
yeah,
give us some
I'm with you on that.
Tell us about some of the words. What about basics? We start with a tent.
Okay, tent, again, Latin. So the Romans gave us so much of our camping vocabulary. Tenta was something stretched out. So this was something stretched over a framework. And do you remember me telling you about the beautiful image that lies behind pavilion? Pavilion goes back to the French papillon, a butterfly, because a pavilion, which is a much grander tent, let's face it, looks like the wings of a butterfly stretched over a framework. So I love that. But yes, tent came to us from the Latin, vaguely linked, I think, to the tenter that gave us tenter hooks. Cool. It's very interesting. I'm seeing a lot of people saying on tender hooks now, or hearing them say on tender hooks. It's definitely on tenter hooks. And tenter was basically a framework on which you would dry wool and cloth. And it would be stretched very, very tightly, attached by hooks on these frames. So I think there is an ancient relationship there. But in its basic level, it goes back to Latin.
Very good. What about the caravan I was in? What's the origin of that?
Yeah, so I was talking about vans earlier. So if you see, white van on the street, it actually has a very exotic past because it goes back to a Persian word, caravan, which was a kind of group of people that were travelling over vast areas in order to get to their destination. So it was a whole sort of procession, really, before it was then applied to individual vehicles. Of course,
like a caravan of camels, I can picture it crossing
exactly.
The desert. It wasn't one vehicle. At all originally. It was a group of people and animals.
It was a group of people travelling, particularly I think in North Africa and Asia. And then from there, as I say, it was applied to a specific vehicle, in this case, probably a horse-drawn wagon. And then I think it slipped into railway usage where it was a third-class carriage, interestingly. And then, of course, became the caravans that people go on holiday with now, or the vans that you will find everywhere.
Have I seen you since I was last in Yorkshire?
I'm not sure you're everywhere, here, there and everywhere.
Here, there and everywhere. Earlier this week, I think I was in Yorkshire. No, a week ago, I was in Bridlington, which is one of my favourite parts of Yorkshire. I love Bridlington. I love the East Riding.
Yes.
And on the coast there, it's magnificent. And I was saying, you know, we know that Yorkshire is God's own country. And the fellow I was with said to me, you know, the East Riding is the only part of Yorkshire to be mentioned in the Bible.
I said, really? He said, yes. It's mentioned. I said, I'm sure it isn't East Riding, can't it? And he said, yes, it's all about the caravan. This is what links to this. I said, the caravan? East Riding? Yes, he said. The caravan of three wise men came from the East, riding their camels. Get it?
Oh.
East Riding.
I get it. I get it. Well, actually, do you remember where riding does come from on the Yorkshire sense?
I think I do, because is it a third? Is
yes.
it come from thridding? Meaning, because that people say there's an East Riding, there's a North Riding, and there's a West Riding. Why isn't there a South Riding? Because there are only three of them.
And yes, it's from the Vikings, absolutely. So it's from Old Norse, and it meant the third part, and it was thrithing in Old English, and then the TH was lost because we were putting estel east or west or north in front of it, so it kind of got slightly swallowed. But yeah, that's where that comes from.
So we have our tent, and we have next to it our caravan. We know about that. The tent is put up with guy ropes. Was Guy a character? An individual?
No.
Who invented
well,
it?
Guy as in, hey guys, I always find this extraordinary, but that goes back to Guy Fawkes. Guido Fawkes, believe it or not.
No.
So yes, it was began with Guy Fawkes, then it moved to the effigy of Guy Fawkes, so a figure. And then
or should we explain to international people who Guy Fawkes was?
Oh yes, absolutely. Do you want to do it or shall I do it?
You do it.
Okay, so Guy Fawkes famously was involved in something called the Gunpowder Plot, which was on the 5th of November 1605.
I'd say that's the date, yeah.
Okay, and we commemorate that. Oh, and basically, sorry, he wanted to, my history is going to get very sketchy here, but he wanted to blow up the Houses of Parliament
yep.
with a number of conspirators, and he was discovered and he was hanged. Eventually for his part in the plot. And every 5th of November, we have in Britain what is called Bonfire Night. And we let out fireworks, we light bonfires, etc.
And we used to burn an effigy of Guy Fawkes himself,
yes.
didn't we?
So from this effigy came the idea of a sort of generic human being, if you like, which is why today it can mean you guys can be multigendered. Doesn't have to just be male.
But it began with Guy Fawkes.
It began with Guy Fawkes, which
Guy
is really
Fawkes
extraordinary,
is the original
isn't it?
Guy. How amazing.
I know. But the guy rope on a tent is completely unconnected. That probably is linked either to a guide, which we think is probably more likely, or to a German word, I think, which is means kind of almost like sort of braille. So it's, again, it's the idea of sort of being tethered in some way or having sort of kind of ropes attached, I suppose. So I'm not talking about braille as in Louis Braille, but braille as in the small ropes that you'll find on a ship.
I've never heard of that word.
Okay.
I've heard of braille as in capital B-R-A-I-L-L-E,
yes.
that special way of in writing that you can read if you are visually impaired.
Yes.
But
it's kind
this
of
is another
language
word.
Patterns of raised dots, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is braille with one L, not an eponym. It goes back to the Latin, I think, for girdle. So it's the idea of kind of attached, being attached to a structure or holding something in place. So that's where guy ropes come from. They're always the bane of my life whenever I'm try and set up a tent. I like the pop-up ones best.
Oh, so do I.
Yes, they're much easier.
I went to the doctor once, you know, to complain that one moment I felt I was a wigwam and the next moment I felt I was a teepee. And the doctor said to me, yeah, you're too tense.
You're too tense.
Boom, boom. I'm sorry. I like a juvenile joke.
It's a good one.
Do you have, you are a mummy, do you have a mummy sleeping bag?
No, I haven't. I have a very generic but very warm sleeping bag, given that I get so cold. But the mummy sleeping bag, I can only imagine, is because it looks like there's a mummy sort of lying encased, embalmed within it when you're actually lying within.
Oh, I thought it was a sort of cosy thing to make you feel warm and cosy.
Oh, well,
you were wrapped
nice
up
idea.
With your mummy.
That's a nice idea, but no, I think it actually they look the shape as well makes it look like it's a sort of outline of a mummy's tomb, which
well,
is a bit strange.
Obviously, a sleeping bag is simply a bag in which you sleep, so that's
yeah.
quite straightforward. What about a rucksack?
Rucksack is from German, so Rücken in German is your back, and a Sack is your bag, so it's a bag for your back, simply.
Very good.
Yeah, which is very simple. Can we do canopy, by the way?
Oh, yes.
Which I love. Going back to the beautiful canopy of trees above you or the canopy that's provided by your tent. Do you remember, I think I told you this one because it's linked to the canapés that you might have at a posh drinks party. So it goes back to the Greek conops, meaning a mosquito. So it was originally a mosquito net. and then applied to all sorts of kind of coverings. And the canapé goes back to the idea that there is often a bed below the mosquito net, and canapés look like little beds or little sofas with little ingredients put on top.
Gosh.
And that's strange, isn't it?
I love it. While we're on those the structures, give me the origin of gazebo, because I know that it has a curious etymology.
Whenever we coin a new word, there's quite a temptation to make it sound like Latin or Greek, because it gives it an air of authority. So that's why in medical circles, for example, because of the great history of classical vocabulary informing medicine or describing medicine, whenever there's a new word coined, people tend to give it a Latin or Greek name. And with gazebo, it was a bit more humorous, I think, because it was modelled on the pattern of lavabo, which is somewhere where you go to wash. So it used the A-B-O suffix in Latin, and it simply means I shall gaze. So lavabo is I shall wash, and gazebo should really be gazebo, is I shall gaze. So it's the idea of I shall look at this in wonder because it's such a beautiful thing. And, you know, have you heard of a belvedere?
I've heard of that word, but I feel a belvedere, you're outside your stately home, and it's a kind of lawn on which you stand looking out over the estate, the belvedere.
Yes, it's a beautiful, it's a bit like a folly almost, isn't it? It's a summer house.
Oh, but a belvedere is a building. Sorry, I thought it was a green space.
It can be a gallery as well. It's usually at rooftop level and you have a really fantastic view. The reason I mention it is that goes back to the idea of a beautiful bel vedere, meaning to see. So this is beautiful to look at. And I think that's the idea of a gazebo, is that I shall gaze either out from the gazebo or at this beautiful structure itself.
In a moment, we're going to have some snacks, I hope. A little something around the campfire. But shall we take a break first?
Okay, I'll go get marshmallows.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is Giles Brandreth and Susie Dent. We're carrying on camping this week. The words, the language, that when we go out and live under canvas. Actually, what's the origin of canvas? Because are tents always made of canvas? Probably not anymore, but they used to be in the old days.
Yeah. Canvas goes back to a Latin word meaning hemp, actually. So it's the idea of what it was made of, but it's linked to cannabis because of it. So it's a sibling of cannabis, which also means hemp.
Oh. Well, whenever I go camping, the weather is always appalling, and I have done it quite a lot. And the one thing I have to take with me are my thermals.
Yes.
Is thermal an interesting word? Oh, I suppose it comes from therm.
Yes, heat, Greek. Yeah. Nothing. They're kind of heat preservers.
So I have my thermals in my nether regions, and I have my gilet, my little zip-up gilet. That's a French word, I assume.
That is a French word, though ultimately it goes back, it's a bit like, I don't know, these have such exotic origins, like cagoule and that kind of thing. It goes back to the Arabic for a waistcoat or a vest actually worn by slaves in Algeria. So quite a sort of dark, exotic past, I suppose.
Very good. Cagoule, is that an interesting source of that? You mentioned it.
Oh, yeah. I just think that quite often we don't realise that, you know, these things that we see as being ultimately quite sort of plain and practical and functional actually have nice origins. So that's, I think, from quite a long time ago, and it's French for a cowl, a sort of cowl neck, which one day I will tell you is linked to the cappuccino coffee that you meet like in the morning, but we don't have time for that now.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to be doing, I wouldn't mind a coffee, though I don't drink coffee anymore, but I'm going to have something by the fire. What about camping food? What will I have there? Toasted marshmallows?
Yeah, sausages. We'll have vegetarian sausages, you and I. Yeah. So sausage, if you remember, goes back to the Latin for salted meat. So it's related to salad, which was salted vegetables. Goes back to salary because of Roman allowances in the military of salt. So sausages will be there. What else should we have?
Well, I want a noggin of some kind.
Oh, noggin, yes. Oh, you have to tell me, this is not our Christmas episode, but do you like eggnog?
I never did. And it's got alcohol in it, isn't it?
It's got alcohol in it, and it's...
It's rather sweet.
It's just the egg bit.
It's a sort of yellow drink that people drink extraordinary things at Christmas, don't they?
They do. Well, the reason I mention it is because the noggin, as in the small quantity of alcohol that you might have around the campfire, is linked to eggnog, because one theory is that eggnog is a drink that, yes, it's sweet, also fairly strong perhaps, and might go straight to your noggin, which also used to mean a person's head. Yeah.
Is the noggin now the drink, or is it the actual mug?
Yeah, it can be a small drinking cup, you're right, but it can also be a small quantity of drink.
So did you see, speaking of small drinking cups, one of our, you know, we have this merch, or Something Rhymes with Purple merch. Did you see somebody tweeted the other day that they'd got our mug, our little mug, with the word bloviate on, and they were thrilled with it.
Oh, good.
Was so pleased. They were loving it.
Good.
And they were.
I've got mine here.
It had arrived. Oh, I like it. She's flashing her bloviator, listeners. What does bloviator mean?
Yes. Bloviator, noun, someone who talks at great length on a subject they know very little about.
Yeah, I better shut up then. Have you got anything more to tell us about the world of camping before we get on to our listeners' letters?
Well, we mentioned marshmallow, which I just think is one of the most beautiful sounding words in the English language. It just kind of sounds soft and fluffy and bouncy to me. But have you ever had a s'more?
A s'more?
Yes.
No, what's a s'more?
Okay, so s'mores are really lovely. They're basically, well, the ones that I've had anyway, are usually chocolate-covered toasted marshmallows. But you can also, in the absolute authentic, genuine s'more, they are sandwiched between what they call graham crackers, in which graham is about Graham, and named after Sylvester Graham, who was actually a bit like Mr. Kellogg, was a nutritionist or a dietitian. I'm not sure he would have approved of s'mores, because they're incredibly sweet, but they're really lovely. And those came about in the 1920s, but they're really making a comeback. It's just that toasting the marshmallow over the fire, covering it in chocolate, and then maybe sandwiching it between two nice little crackers. Very good.
There was a reminder this week, a story or the other day, of somebody being killed by, was it a buffalo? A reminder that these big beasts can be quite frightening. And I do remember as a child going camping, and we actually found ourselves in a field where during the night, or maybe it was as dawn broke, a cow's head poked itself through the flap at the entrance of the tent. Can you imagine how alarming that was?
I would never be afraid of a single cow, but I have read quite scary stories of cows as a herd basically becoming quite belligerent, only when they're sort of scared. But I think if I had a lot of cows running towards me, that would not be good.
One cow could cope. It's also tricky sharing a tent. Many, many years ago, I was with a group of people who were, we were theatricals, and they were doing al fresco theatre. Al fresco was not the name of the agent. That could have been, oh, yeah, my agent did all the open air work. He was called al fresco. it's from...
Like Mr. Diggin.
We've discussed that before, I know, in one of our other episodes.
In the fresh.
Well, we were young troubadours, and we travelled around the country doing open air Shakespeare. And I remember being in the next door tent to this couple. We were sharing tents. And in the next door tent was this couple. And they were attached to other people. It was a boy and a girl. They may have been playing Romeo and Juliet. And you get quite intense on tour. Literally, they were intense in the tent. And they decided at the beginning of the evening that they were in their separate sleeping bags, and they were head to toe, as it were, so that his head was by her toes and vice versa. And then I couldn't get to sleep because they spent the whole night of discussing whether or not they should get into each other's sleeping bags. And they had this terribly intense conversation. It went on for hours and hours with her saying, oh, go on, why don't we? You know, we're on tour, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's not as if we're married. It's only, you know, we're just... And he was saying, well, actually, I'm engaged. I'm sort of engaged. I don't know, do you think we should? And it was completely gripping to listen to. But after about 2 hours of this, I had to put my head through the tent and say, either get on with it,
well do it,
or let us go to sleep. And there was no reply of any kind. Silence fell.
They were probably mortified.
And I retreated to my tent, and then I had to listen intently to see whether I could hear. And I think I heard a very quiet unzipping.
Oh.
I don't know. You'll know who you are if I'm talking about you. It was many years ago. You will now be a person of riper years. If you want to share this story, do get in touch with us. And no names, no pectoral. What happens on tour stays on tour. But if you want to tell me how that night ended, I would love to know. And if you've got a story you want to share about your camping holidays, it's purple@somethingelse.com. purple@somethingelse.com. And something is spelt without a G, because we like to be a little bit different. Have people been in touch this week, Susie?
Yes. Do you remember we talked a while ago about someone who loves to give books away as opposed to a biblioclept, which was one of my trio once, which is somebody who is constantly stealing other people's books. And after Paul Peterson from Minnesota suggested Bibliador in reference to his wife, we've had some more come in. So Will Wallace suggests a Frieda, instead of a reader, a Frieda. Adrian Moore, who's a Brit living in Washington, D.C., likes bibliosocialite. Jill Pearson thinks that someone who sets books free, that's a lovely way of putting it, could be a livretarian.
Oh, I like the libertarian. That's very
yes,
clever.
Instead of a libertarian. And Mark Newman from Wexford in Ireland goes down a slightly different route with this email. He says, well known for her philanthropic gestures, including giving away millions of children's books, I propose that the world should honour Dolly, the great Dolly Parton, and the act of giving away books ought to be known as partonage instead of patronage. I love that.
That is brilliant. You know, I love to name drop. And
yes.
I have met Dolly Parton.
Oh, and she's brilliant.
She is both brilliant. I met her to talk about this scheme that she has, literally, of, you know, encouraging literacy and reading and giving away books, this wonderful example of partonage. But she is tiny. She is really, really tiny. I mean, I know she's famous for being, as it were, wonderfully proportioned, and she loves that and she makes the most of it. But she's a very petite person. You know, she's not tall at all. Really, complete surprise.
Yeah, I've always imagined her as being very petite.
There are a lot of small film stars, you know, and they often have big heads. Tom Cruise is quite small from the neck down, but quite a large head. Big head, small body, and often huge lips. Huge lips.
I wondered where you were going there.
But let's not talk about Julia Roberts now. Who else has been in touch?
Okay, Caroline Costa Leng has written in to say that our show has helped her walk many, many Ks while working in Melbourne during lockdown. So thanks for that, Caroline. Her daughter said to her the other night, I know what cream of the crop means, but can you tell me why it's crop? What does a crop have to do with cream?
Very good.
They couldn't find the answer and thought that we might know. Well, the crop is simply a crop that you might harvest in the field. So that one's not surprising there. And cream is simply used here figuratively to mean the top or the best of something, because obviously cream rises to the top when milk is left to stand. So it came to be used figuratively to mean the top or the very best. So you might say they're the cream of society, for example. And the cream of the crop simply means the very best of that yield. That's the idea.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Caroline Costa Leng, Melbourne, Australia. How wonderful. They're all locked up in Australia, you know, locked up for years.
Hopefully that will go soon. But we're here anyway.
We're here for you. Keep listening
keep
to us.
Company.
We care. Susan. Oh, look, that's amusing. I was talking, we had Costa mentioned there, Caroline Costa Leng. And here's someone called Susan Coop. Or could it be Co-op? Is she named after the co-op?
No, I think Coop.
Coop is her name.
I think Coop.
What is Susan Coop writing to us about?
She was walking in North Yorkshire near beautiful Harrogate and came across a spring with Adam's Ale engraved into a nearby rock. And her husband from West Yorkshire had never heard of it. But Susan is from the Midlands and knew that it meant water. But they were both puzzled about where it comes from. It has indeed meant water for quite a long time, since the 17th century. And the idea is simply a reference to the Adam, the first man of Adam and Eve. And so water is taken to be a drink of natural simplicity. And so appropriate to the first, at that point, untarnished, pure first man. That's the idea. And I looked this up in the Oxford English Dictionary. There's a quote from a 17th century lawyer that speaks of poor prisoners that have been shut up in dungeons, allowed only a poor pittance of Adam's ale and scarce a penny bread a day to support their lives. So a bit miserable.
Well, thank you for being in touch wherever you are in the world and whatever your name is. I love unusual names, and I think Susan Coop, it's a glorious name. Now it's time, Susie Dent, for your trio of words. Interesting, genuine words that you feel deserve greater currency. What have you got for us this week?
Okay, well, I'm going to be sort of merry-go-sorry with these. I love merry-go-sorry, if you remember. This is not one of my trio, but it means the sort of merry-go-round of life, which occasionally brings sorrow and then happiness and then sorrow. And it's all very, very circular. So the first one is more in sorrow, and it's the verb to gowl. So written like howl, only with a G at the front. And it means to weep more in anger or frustration than sorrow. To gowl. The next one is something that we all might do in the shower first thing, for example. I just think it's really nice and it's very pithy. To glad warble. Glad warble, hyphenated, is to sing joyfully.
I love that.
To glad warble.
Well, it makes it clear what it is. To glad warble. You're warbling gladly.
Exactly. And then the third one is, I think I might have talked about a snirt before now, but this is to snirtle, S-N-I-R-T-L-E, and it's to try to suppress your laughter, but without much success. It's got a little bit of a kind of snort in there, but it's a kind of, you know, very, that kind of thing.
Snirtle, I like it. A very useful word.
It is.
I've got a poem. If you're new to Something Rhymes with Purple, we have a sort of shape to our shows. We usually pick a theme, and we always have a trio of interesting words from Susie, and I often try to choose a poem that's appropriate to whatever we've been discussing. And for me, one of the blights of going camping are the midges. The insects, the midges, the creepy crawlies. I'm not good at any of those things. You obviously can cope with a cow poking its face through into your tent. What I can't cope with, apart from the cow, is creepy crawlies, flies of any kind. But sometimes they are beautiful and fascinating. And there's a poem, a summer poem, written by the great Thomas Hardy that actually describes his encounter with I think it was a daddy long legs and a moth and a Dumbledore. Do you know what a Dumbledore is?
Yeah, it's an odd word for a bumblebee.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, of course, a character now famously in J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter stories.
It's because she said that she liked to imagine Dumbledore walking around and humming to himself quietly.
Ah.
It's a nice idea.
Well, I think there are four insects in this poem, as well as the poet Thomas Hardy. And the poem actually begins indoors, but you could picture it maybe out of doors around the campfire with a lamp lit late at night. A shaded lamp and a waving blind, and the beat of a clock from a distant floor. On this scene enter, winged, horned and spined, a longlegs, a moth and a Dumbledore. While mid my page there idly stands a sleepy fly that rubs its hands. Thus meet we five in this still place, at this point of time, at this point in space. My guests besmear my new penned line, or bang at the lamp and fall supine. God's humblest they, I muse. Yet why? They know earth secrets that know not I.
Well, and how true is that?
Oh, he's so brilliant, Thomas Hardy. Completely gripping character. Anyway, more poetry, more wonderful words from Susie Dent when you next join us. We've got 100 more episodes that you can catch up on, so please dip into our grab bag of delights from yesteryear, but stick with us,
Purple people, we love you. We're grateful to you.
We do. And I should just say that for those listeners of acute hearing, you'll probably hear the backdrop to this entire episode has been just sort of the drip, 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 drip of rain outside. Very appropriate to camping. But here in Britain, in Blighty, it is absolutely chucking it down, at least in my neck of the woods.
I thought it was your tummy rumbling. I thought she's got the constant pitter-patter of rain.
No. But even if you did hear that, I hope you still enjoyed it. And we hope that you will join us again. Something Rhymes with Purple is a Something Else production, produced by Lawrence Bassett and Harriet Wells, with additional production from Steve Ackerman, Ella McLeod, Jay Beale, Josh, who has joined us today for the first time. Thank you, Josh. And, well, I don't know where he is, but frankly, you know, we just keep him on the credits until he comes back. It's, you know, who?
Gully. He's away with the Dumbledores.